Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Jan Lipavský is meeting with Visegrad Group foreign ministers in Bratislava. The court case against the former Prime Minister Petr Nečas and his wife, who are facing charges of bribery, has reopened. And the Bohemian crown jewels are set to go on display at the St. Vitus Cathedral in Prague for the first time since 1955. Czechia's head of diplomacy Jan Lipavský is taking part in an informal meeting of Visegrad Group foreign ministers in Bratislava this Tuesday. Among the topics to be discussed are Russia's aggression against Ukraine and the Visegrad Group's role in relation to the European Union, the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced on Tuesday. The session follows up on a meeting of Visegrad Group prime ministers that took place 2 weeks ago, at which the heads of government agreed on a joint approach in regards to helping Ukraine. The Visegrad Group is composed of Czechia, Hungary, Poland and Slovakia, with Slovakia currently holding the year-long presidency. Monday saw the reopening of the court case against former Prime Minister Petr Nečas, his wife Jana Nečasová and the former Deputy Agriculture Minister Roman Boček, Czech television reports. The trio face charges of bribery in connection with a deal the former Prime Minister struck in the autumn of 2012 with three former Civic Democrat MPs to facilitate the passing of government-sponsored tax legislation by the lower house. Although the accused were acquitted of the charges 2 years ago by the District Court for Prague 1, the acquittal was cancelled by the Board of Appeals in September of 2021, and the case has now reopened. Mr. Nečas and his wife maintain that they are innocent. If they're found guilty of corruption, they could face up to 6 years in prison. The crown jewels of the Kingdom of Bohemia, one of Czechia's most prized historical artifacts, are to be displayed to the public from January 17th to January 21st, 2023, the head of the Office of the President, Vratislav Minář, announced on Monday. For the first time since 1955, the crown jewels will be displayed in the transept of St. Vitus Cathedral. The skull of St. Wenceslas, the patron saint of the Czech nation, will be displayed in the St. Wenceslas Chapel within the cathedral. The crown jewels are composed of the St. Wenceslas crown, which was originally made for Charles IV's coronation in the 14th century, the sceptre and the orb, which were added to the crown jewels later. The Bohemian crown jewels are normally locked away from the public and tend to be exhibited only once every 5 years. The last time they were shown to the public was in January 2018, the year that marked the 100th anniversary of the founding of Czechoslovakia. Real wages, meaning wages adjusted for inflation, declined year-on-year by 9.8% in the third quarter of 2022, according to data from the Czech Statistics Agency. The nominal wage during the same period grew on average by 6.1% to 39,858 crowns. According to the head of the Labour Market and Equal Opportunities Statistics Department of the Czech Statistics Agency, Dalibor Holý, the lowest rise in wages was identifiable in sectors where there is a large number of state employees, meaning in the health and social services, public administration, defence and education sectors. A plane flying from Poland to the UK was diverted to Prague Airport on Sunday night following a report of a, I quote, possible bomb on board of the aircraft. The EasyJet flight from Krakow to Bristol landed at the Václav Havel Airport shortly before 11 p.m. After a three-hour search by explosive experts, the airport announced that there was no dangerous object found in the Airbus. And in sport, Czech national football team striker Patrik Schick may need a further operation for his groin injury, the website of German football magazine Kicker reports. The Bayer Leverkusen player was unable to join his team's Friday training session, and it is unclear whether he will be able to start in Leverkusen's first match of the spring half of the Bundesliga season in January. The 26-year-old, who was the second-best Bundesliga goalscorer last year, has had a troubled season so far, last being able to play for Leverkusen on November 1st, Kicker writes. He is set to be examined by doctors this week. Schick has scored 18 goals in 35 appearances for the national team, and his strike against Scotland at the UEFA Euro 2020 was nominated for the FIFA Puskás Award. Finally, of course, we come to the weather. Temperatures are expected to range around 3 degrees Celsius on Tuesday, with rain and snowfall expected across the northern and central parts of the country. My name is Tom Akincrow, and that is all the news for now. Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's programme, Ukrainian soldiers have begun training in Czechia. Mikuláš, or St. Nicholas as he's known in the English-speaking world, will be making his comeback in Czechia on Monday evening after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus. And later we will speak to departing British Ambassador to Prague, Nick Archer, who was surprised by Czech's knowledge of his country.
You come here and you think, do they know us at all? And of course you discover that actually they know us very well indeed.
All that's coming up, so please stay with us. Ukrainian soldiers have begun training here in Czechia days after the country's legislators approved such a move. Meanwhile, Czechia's commitment to helping the country is reflected in a report that one Czech factory is producing a tank every 4 days for Ukraine. Ian Willoughby has been following this story and joins me now. Ian, how many Ukrainian soldiers are here?
Well, Tom, that's not exactly clear. The number or when they arrived have not been revealed for security reasons. But what we do know is that they arrived within days of both houses of the Czech Parliament passing a bill that allows up to 4,000 Ukrainian soldiers to train on Czech territory between now and the end of next year. And on Sunday, the Chief of Staff of the Czech Army, Karel Řehka, said that some were now training at the Libava military zone, which is in the Olomouc region in the east of the country.
And what is the aim of this training?
Well, the Czech army said on Twitter on Sunday that the main idea was to ensure Ukrainian soldiers were capable of conducting combat operations independently and effectively defending their own country. The army said that the training was part of a Europe-wide effort under the banner of the EU assistance mission to the Ukraine or to Ukraine. And according to earlier reports, there is a plan for up to 5 40-day training rotations, with each of those to have 800 troops participating.
There's also been a story in the news about a Czech firm that produces a tank every 4 days for Ukraine. What do we know about that?
Well, the news site Novinky.cz reported on Monday that a company called Excalibur Army in Sternberg in Moravia is producing a large amount of hardware for Ukraine. A company representative called Richard Kubiena said they had delivered their first rocket launchers to the Kiev government just a few days after the Russians attacked Ukraine in February. Since then, Excalibur Army has provided over 120 pieces of machinery to Ukraine. They are mainly modernized T-72 and T-55 tanks, as well as armored vehicles and howitzers. And they say, as you mentioned, that they're producing a tank for Ukraine every 4 days. By the way, some of those tanks had been bound for an African state, an unnamed African state, but it was persuaded to leave them to Ukraine, Novinky reported.
And of course, Czechia has been doing a lot more to help Ukrainian.
Yes, indeed. As well as taking in a high per capita number of refugees from Ukraine, the Czechs have donated a large amount of military gear to the country. However, of course, the exact figures and the types of equipment have not been revealed, also for security reasons. The government has also approved tens of billions of crowns in sales from Czech arms makers. They're either being bought by Ukraine itself or by other states on behalf of Ukraine or for Ukraine. And of course, as everybody knows, the Czechs bought a tank for Ukraine via a crowdfunding campaign.
Thanks for that information, Ian. Moving on now, on the evening of December 5th, Mikuláš, or St. Nicholas, as he's known in the English-speaking world, will be making his comeback to Czechia after 2 years away due to the pandemic. As Anna Fodor reports, he will be attempting also to break some records this year.
Last year, many municipal and local Mikuláš celebrations were cancelled, with the health minister advising Czechs against inviting Mikuláš troops into their homes and to wear respirators when partaking in the festivities outdoors. In 2020, the situation was even worse, with restrictions still in place regarding the number of people allowed to gather in one place, masks and social distancing, leading many to have their Mikuláš events online and causing the interest in virtual Mikuláš visits to skyrocket. This year, however, Mikuláš is back in full swing. For example, a rich programme awaits children in the Moravian town of Uherské Hradiště from 3 p.m, including carol singing, competitions and jugglers. Ivana Zubková, director of the Šikula Children's Home, which is helping to organise the event, elaborates.
koňskou družkou přijedou čertíci a andělci a budeme společně čekat.
The devils and angels will arrive by horse-drawn carriage and we will wait together for the arrival of St. Nicholas, who should come down to us in Masaryk Square at around 5 p.m. from the left tower of the church.
Věže kostelní.
In Brno, children will be able to get gifts from St. Nicholas not only in the town square, but also on the tram, says Hanna Tomášťiková, spokesperson for the transport company of the city of Brno.
Klasicky tak jako každý rok, kdy zveme maminky, tatínky.
Just like every year, we'll bring mothers, fathers and grandparents with children to our city's Mikuláš festivities. Except this time there will also be St. Nicholas, the devil and the angel on the tram, who will listen to a song or poem from the children and give them a small reward in return.
Básničku nebo písničku a dají dětem drobnou odměnu.
St. Nicholas will also be making an appearance on Republic Square in Pilsen, or rather, several St. Nicholases. According to the mayor of the central Pilsen district, David Procházka, the town is attempting to set a new record.
We want to try to fill the square this evening with St. Nicholas's angels and devils, because we're trying to get into the Guinness Book of Records for the largest number of people gathered in one place wearing Mikuláš masks. After 8 p.m., every person who comes wearing a mask will get a free drink, so I believe that we will be able to photograph a square full of masks.
Mikuláš, or St. Nicholas, is the patron saint of, among other things, sailors, fishermen, travellers, merchants, wealth, happy marriages, pharmacists, lawyers, and children. It is primarily with children in mind that St. Nicholas Day is celebrated in Czechia and other countries, mostly around Europe. Although the tradition is largely absent from Anglophone countries, it can be found in places settled by Europeans hailing from countries with a history of the tradition, such as Dutch, German, and Czech communities in North America. St. Nicholas Day is on 6th December, but in the Czech Republic, it is celebrated on the eve of the Patron Saints Day, the night of 5th December.
And just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, where now the outgoing UK ambassador to Czechia, Nick Archer, shares a number of insights into his life and work in Prague in this edition of One-on-One with Ian Willoughby.
After 5 years, British Ambassador Nick Archer's time in Prague is now coming to an end. In an interview on the eve of his departure, the career diplomat discusses a wide range of subjects. These include the joys of having exclusive use of a Malastrana palace during lockdown, lobbying for the expulsion of Russian diplomats, and how his teenage sons discovered Prague as a city of the night. You've been the British Ambassador to Prague since 2018. What have been some of the most enjoyable aspects or moments of your time here in Prague?
I think the most enjoyable thing in the end is meeting the people. I mean, I arrived in Central Europe really not knowing what to expect in any regard. But I'd been to Prague once and seen the architecture. What I hadn't done really was begin to get to know anybody. And it is a perpetual source of pleasure to me that I meet so many people who are both interesting and intelligent and making change, but who are also just terrifically nice, very generous, very welcoming. Maybe as the ambassador, maybe people treat me better. I'll probably never know, but I would certainly say that I get treated incredibly warmly. And then that brings up these moments.
I met you quite recently at a classical music event, and you told me you had made efforts when you first came here to make connections with the Czech music world.
Yes, I did, because I love it. And I kind of suspected that it might be one of the great aspects of life here. And actually, going back to your question about moments, it was just last week in the end, actually, that I sat down after a concert with Simon Rattle sitting next to me and Magdalena Kozina on the other side of the table. And I thought, this is just amazing, and this is actually something that, first of all, would never have happened to me in Britain, and second is one of the huge privileges of ambassadoring, which is that you can sort of stick your fingers into any number of different pies. So that'd be a good example.
You got, during your time here, a sheltered dog. How has having him or her affected your experience of living here?
Well, again, it's a bridge to people, actually. You know, I go out for walks and I get into conversations. I've picked up a lot of a certain kind of Czech from having that dog. I mean, you start off with the entry-level question, is it a dog or a bitch? And you sort of take it from there. So it's a kind of a bond, and it's very evident in the streets of Prague now that he's more famous than I am. And there was one marvellous moment at the castle where somebody said, good morning, Ambassador. And I said, do I know you? And she said, well, no, you don't. And I don't know you either, but I do know your dog.
You have two teenage sons. Have they spent much time here during your years in Prague?
Well, because I'm a brutal Englishman of a traditional kind, I sent them away to boarding schools. I mean, actually, that delivers the kind of educational continuity that you need in my line of business. But strangely, we stayed on an extra year for various reasons, COVID, EU presidency. And it is in this last year, which they never should have had, that they've suddenly discovered Prague as a city of the night, and all summer with all kinds of friends and, you know, kids of friends of ours. You know, they were doing all-nighter after all-nighter. So I guess that in the end, because they were too young before, they've got the point of Prague and are now rather resentful of the fact that there isn't going to be another summer.
What have been some of the most challenging tasks you've had over the years? I presume explaining Brexit probably over a longer period can't have been that easy.
I would describe my time here as really having been all about Brexit and about having kind of brought the relationship through to one that was constructed and existed within the framework of being members of the European Union to a relationship that is much more traditional in a way. It's kind of, you know, in diplomatic jargon, bilateral. And we've had to effect that change. On your point about explaining, I think it's very simple in the end. You know, I've always said that this was what people voted for and the government had committed to giving people what they voted for. And what's been quite funny, interesting in the Czech Republic is quite often, I mean, not by any means all of the time, that question about Brexit will be accompanied by a wish we could have had that choice from an extraordinary range of people. Not people necessarily who would have voted to leave, but I think that people understand that we had a particular freedom, maybe as an island on the periphery of Europe, to make the decision we did, and that there are advantages associated with it.
I expect you must communicate a lot with London about the situation here in Czechia. What are the things that concern you about this country? For example, I've seen you speaking about the spread of disinformation here.
What concerns me, I have to be very clear that there's very little about the Czech Republic itself that would concern us. I mean, I personally think that this is a successful, in my experience, a happy country. It's a country that certainly went into COVID with a very strong economic position. I think it understands where it is in the world, you know, in the European Union, in NATO, staunchly pro-Western and so on and so forth. But yeah, there are these global threats, essentially, that affect all of us. And disinformation is a massive one. And for me, the really curious thing about disinformation is that, you know, we could agree that this is a virtual phenomenon. It exists in cyberspace. And yet, the Czech Republic's geography still seems to make a difference. That proximity to Russia, that even greater proximity to Ukraine, and I guess the history of being, you know, a subjugated part of the Soviet Empire for so long.
3 years ago, the British Embassy in the Thun Palace in Malostrana celebrated its centenary. How have you found living and working in the palace?
I have found it completely fantastic. And, you know, whilst COVID was in all kinds of ways a complete disaster, most of us who didn't lose relations or friends, and that's a very important qualifier, most of us who got through it okay are nostalgic about some aspects of that quiet period of our lives. And it gave us an opportunity to inhabit the Thun Palace, forbidden to have anybody from outside coming to visit us, to inhabit it in a way that I don't think anyone had ever done, frankly, as ambassador. So we lived in it and got to know it in a very different way as our, you know, unchallenged, exclusive use home for, you know, 18 months, actually, which is a huge privilege.
During the communist period, it must have been a building of great interest to the local authorities. Is there any kind of sign today of the Cold War years?
Do you know, the only sign is something that you would never see, which is that actually the grand rooms that some of our listeners, I'm sure, will have visited were formerly a floor down. So that whole public entertaining space was lifted up a floor. And the reason for that, very briefly, was that we needed to bring offices into the centre, which were formerly up against the outer wall, because the communists were able to listen to people in those outer offices. So in the end, we were thinking, where shall we put the defence section? I think particularly, you know, the defence attaché and his people. And the only answer was, well, let's squeeze the house and increase the office space. And so that's the only thing, the only consequence I can think of 50 years of communism.
From your interactions with Czechs over the last few years, what is your sense of how they tend to see the UK?
I've said that I didn't know Central Europe really at all. I'd lived in Northern Europe and I'd lived in the Mediterranean, and of course I come from Western Europe, so this was a new area. And I did not expect very much awareness of the UK at all, because we don't have some of those strong bonds that I'd experienced in Malta, where we'd been the colonial power, or indeed in Denmark, where Montgomery had liberated them in 1945 and we had a queen who was the cousin of the queen. So you come here and you think, do they know us at all? And of course you discover that actually they know us very well indeed. And whilst there's this huge stain on our reputation in the shape of the Munich Agreement, that doesn't seem to compromise an overall affection. Maybe that's naive of me. Again, maybe people are saying something to me as ambassador, but actually I think the affection here is genuine and really deep-seated. And the knowledge of Britain is, you know, disconcertingly deep also. So that's been another one of those pleasant surprises that you were asking about at the beginning.
In my experience, many Czechs have a lot of affection for the British royal family. In the late 90s, you worked as assistant private secretary to the then Prince Charles for 3 years. Yeah. What were you actually doing with Prince Charles?
The support team basically divides up his various interests, or divided, I should say now, because as Prince of Wales, obviously, he had extraordinary freedom to pursue campaigns and interests that he thought were important. And, I mean, such was the level of activity that, you know, there were four or five of us, I think, sometimes, just ensuring that he was able to do what he wanted in particular areas. My areas were twofold. First of all was the foreign office man on the team. I did all the foreign tours and foreign contacts. But then I had a domestic side to my life, which was both arts and culture, particular loves of mine, and also linked to the foreigner thing, I suppose. I looked after our relationships with non-Christian communities, with immigrant communities, across an amazing spectrum.
I'm sure many people ask you this, but what is the now King Charles like at the personal level?
He's great, and you would expect me to say that, but I mean, you couldn't do that job if you didn't basically buy in. And I'm a huge admirer of his. I admire his stamina, his single-mindedness. There's a huge amount of self-discipline doing that job day after day, year after year, you know, until death. It's not, I think, a secret that Prince Wales, you know, hardly drinks, he doesn't smoke, he keeps himself fit. He works incredibly hard on those public days in particular, where every encounter with a human being has to be right, because, you know, he could never afford to get impatient or so tired that that person came away feeling disappointed. And I just used to look at, particularly on a tour or on a day in Britain, you know, one would meet hundreds of people and he would leave each one of them feeling like they'd had a special moment.
Queen Elizabeth was on the throne for 7 decades. How difficult do you think it'll be for King Charles to succeed her, this monarch who basically is all any of us know?
I think it's kind of happened very well, and I think the succession, you know, is now a fact and an uncontroversial one, which is not in any way to set aside, you know, the colossal affection that we saw for the Queen at the moment of her death. But it is to say that almost immediately, looking back, one saw that there was maybe a ripeness to the timing of her disappearing and the Prince of Wales taking over. Still young enough to do the job, but with a colossal amount of experience and wisdom derived from whatever it was, you know, 73 years of more or less direct preparation.
Also, I'm curious, I follow you on Twitter, many people do. I presume most of your followers speak English or understand English, at least. Why do you tweet in Czech?
because I don't think that most of my followers do, actually. I mean, we talk about this quite a lot, and it's very speculative. But I think I simply get access to more people if I'm mixing quite a lot of Czech in. And you'll see that if I'm deliberately pointing at an English-speaking audience, I'll tweet in English. God knows, it's a lot easier. But no, I want to be talking to Czechs, and I don't want them to be having to, you know, regard my tweet as hard work, you know, as kind of a bit of the English lesson.
Do you have somebody you check the Czech with or who translates? I'm just curious how that works.
No, I check the Czech. I mean, I'm happy to admit that I use artificial translation mechanisms, but as any English speaker in this country knows, they are an absolute nightmare because they can't, for example, distinguish genders at the most straightforward level. So my Czech is absolutely good enough for me to look at a Google Translate or whatever and think, that's not right. And then I will try and rephrase what I want to say in a way that gives me Czech I'm happy with. So I take absolutely full responsibility. And, you know, when I get my Czech wrong sometimes, that's not kind of deliberate. That's just because clearly my system has let me down for a moment.
I've often wondered about diplomats. This is a bit of a kind of indulgence, if I may. How do you guys go to so many receptions where there's food and drink? Every evening, I presume you go to a few, or that's how it seems from the outside. Mm. How do you manage to do that without gaining weight or developing a drink problem?
I think it's an extremely good question. Do you know, when I was a very young man in London, I shared a house with a diplomat's daughter. I mean, we were in our early 20s. And he, as they said, had laid down his liver in the service of his country. So I guess I was aware. I mean, he was not a happy chap. I was aware of the risk from the start. But, you know, I think it's a risk that exists in your profession of journalism. It's a risk that exists in my wife's profession of barristering, lawyers, that is, for Czechs listening, not a barista. And, you know, we all exercise some self-control.
My final question, Nick Archer, in 30 years or 35 years, when you're sitting in your rocking chair back in the UK, what do you think you will remember of Prague?
I will remember the Toon Palace, certainly. I will remember the utter joy of empty Prague when COVID first hit. I will remember some diplomatic moments. I presented my credentials one February or spring afternoon. And the next morning, first thing, I was lobbying across the Czech government, you know, having only just been allowed to talk to ministers, that credential ceremony, to try and encourage the Czech government to expel Russian diplomats because of Skripal. And there are these moments.
And you were listening there to an interview with the outgoing British ambassador to the Czech Republic, Nick Archer, in that edition of One on One. That interview also brings us to the end of today's programme. It's all from me, Tom McEncroe, and the team here at Radio Prague International, and we would just like to say goodbye by wishing you a very nice rest of the day.